This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 117.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got a great interview for you with Natalie Lussier. Now, Natalie is going to be talking about how you can launch a new product and service, how you can do it online and do it really effectively. But before we get to the interview, I just wanted to mention my 2017 media diary. So I've put together an A4 desk diary that you can use to help plan out your media coverage for the coming year. So as well as being a desk diary that you can use every day, it's also got hundreds of awareness days and key dates and anniversaries that you can use to generate story ideas and to make sure you're planning far enough ahead. It also comes with detailed instructions on how to use the diary, so how to mark it up for the whole year. It comes with information on lead time, so that's how far ahead journalists tend to work on magazines and newspapers and radio and TV. And there's also a sample pitch in there and tips on pitching journalists and chasing them up. So it's really got everything that you need to have a successful PR year in 2017. And as well as being useful for press, you can also use it for your social media and your content marketing too. So I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can get yours from. We can send it to you wherever you are in the world. But obviously, it will take a little bit more time to get to you if you're in Australia or the US or Canada, like I know some of our listeners are, and some of them are even further afield than that. So now, on with the main part of the show. Joining me on the show today is Natalie Lussier. Now, Natalie is an online marketing expert and a software startup founder. I've been following her work for quite a few years now, and I started with her free 30-day email list building challenge a few years ago, and I've also used her resources on building and launching online courses. Now I'm looking to move my membership community onto my own website, so I'm considering her membership software Ambition Ally. So welcome to the show, Natalie.
Thank you so much for having me, Janet. This is awesome.
So might you be able to start by telling us a little bit about you and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, I always like to start very young because I kind of got the internet bug early. I started making websites when I was just 12 years old, and that really kind of got me interested in the online space, obviously not to the degree that I am today, but it got me to study software engineering in school and even to take different internship positions at startups and also on Wall Street. And I was really lucky because when I graduated from college, I got this job offer for a Wall Street job that I had worked at as an intern. And a big part of me was like, oh my God, this is great. But a big part of me was like, this is not the path for me. I had always wanted to start a business. And so I turned down that job and I started my first business online. And it was all about healthy eating. So it was really, you know, my passion and for health and nutrition. So I was all self-taught when it came to that side of the business. But all the tech stuff came really easily. I built my own website. I did all the, you know, the setup for the automation and the emails and all that stuff. And eventually people started asking me, who made your website and how are you doing all this technical and marketing stuff that you're doing online? So I pivoted the business and started offering web design services and then consulting and training. And then it kind of came full circle when I actually hired my husband to join the company and a couple of other developers to start making software. So now we have a couple of different parts of the business. We have the training side, and then we also have the software side.
Wow. And I wanted to specifically get you on the show to talk about launching. And I think I remember reading somewhere that your first launch wasn't, you've got a massively successful business now, but your first launch wasn't quite the success you have today.
Yeah. So that very first launch was a total flop. It was crickets, nobody bought. And it was in that very first business all about healthy eating. So I decided, okay, I'm going to launch a course. I think this is going to be the thing that's going to take my business to the next level. And I've seen other people do it. So I think I can figure out how to do it myself. So I put together a sales page. I did a teleseminar, which is kind of like a webinar, but just it was on the phone. And I had a couple of people on the call. One of them was my dad and nobody signed up. And I was like, oh, what did I do wrong? Like, I thought I did all the steps. And I regrouped and I kind of learned a lot more about the marketing side of launching. And I spent a lot more time and work with a mentor on my launch skills. And then the next time I did a launch, you know, I got $3,000 of sales for my first course. And it was essentially the same course, but it was a lot more specific to what people wanted. Mm-hmm. And the marketing for it was just a lot more in tune with what my audience needed from me.
And what did you learn from that first launch then?
So I learned a couple of things. The first time I tried to launch, I didn't really know what a launch was supposed to be, right? So I kind of had seen other people do it and I thought, okay, these are the elements of a launch, you know, some emails, maybe some videos, maybe a sales page, a special offer, something like that. But I didn't really know kind of the underpinnings of the launch. And I also was creating the product and the course that I thought people wanted as opposed to what they actually told me they wanted. So the next time I did my launch, I did a couple of free sessions with people. So what I did is I did a contest where people could win a session with me if they told me what they were the most frustrated about when it came to their health and eating habits. And what I found out is that most people were looking for help with cravings. So I ended up creating the course. It was called Cure Cravings Forever. And that was way more specific than the first course. The first course was just called like set yourself up for eating success, basically. So it was a lot more specific to what people needed. And it was a lot of the same content. I had to do a little bit more research around cravings and make it more geared towards that. But then also what I did was everything in the pre-launch led into people who might be needing help with cravings. So for example, one of the free things that I gave away in my pre-launch was a book called 28 Desserts You Can Eat Every Day. And that was all about healthy desserts. So if people who are addicted to sweets, who might need help with their cravings, would probably be interested in that book. So that brought in a lot of new people who opted into my email list who ended up becoming customers.
Mm. So it sounds like you learned the first time around that perhaps you were creating something that you thought people wanted. And the second time around, you focused on finding out what people really wanted first.
Exactly. Yes. And a lot of times I think we as creative people, as business owners, we're like, oh yeah, like this is exactly what's going to help people. And like I said, a lot of the theories from what I was going to teach in the course ended up in the second course and the second program that I ended up creating, but I didn't have to call it something generic. You know, I could go into meeting people where they were at and where they needed help and then kind of go bigger picture from there.
You've now pivoted and you now train people in online marketing. So if somebody was launching their first product or service, where would you suggest that they start?
Yeah, I mean, we have a program called Launch It and Profit. So that's definitely one of the places you can start. And we have a bunch of different ideas for how to validate, you know, your product ideas and a process to kind of walk you through how to write your sales copy, which I think is very important to really communicating the value of your offers. But yeah, I mean, in terms of really getting started, I think really what it comes down to is making sure that you line up your offer with your audience and what they're looking for. So for me today, I never create a product or a course or a program or anything unless somebody asks me for it, and usually more than one person. But if you are just starting out and you don't have people asking you to create things for them yet, then I think it's important to learn how to do sort of like stealth mode research. And mm-hmm. So that could be going into Facebook groups or listening to what people are sort of complaining about or having recurring issues with. So for example, it could be looking at reviews of products on Amazon and even, you know, topics, you know, if there's books about the topic that you want to create a course around, then you can go and see what are people saying that it's missing in certain books or that seems to be overlooked. And that could be a great topic for a book too, or a book or a course, sorry.
Okay. So essentially you're looking for the problems that people are having and the difficulties that they're having and looking for how you might be able to solve those problems.
Exactly. Because usually, you know, people, you know, they are looking for that positive experience, that happy transformational outcome. But a lot of times, the times that they will take out their credit card and buy a course or program is to solve a problem and to really fix something that they know needs fixing.
So the first thing you need to do, it sounds like you're saying, is validating your idea and just making sure that people actually want the thing that you want to create. And would you advise people, if you've got an idea for a course or a program or a service, would you advise people to make it up front, or would you advise people to put up a sales page and see if people are interested and take it from there?
I used to be 100% you should not create it before you launch it. And I think it's a little bit trickier these days, but I still feel like there's so much merit to doing it that way. And that's mostly from my experience. So the first time I did my flop launch, I hadn't created all the content yet. So I was lucky. I was kind of off the hook. I was able to regroup and figure out how to do this. And I didn't have all these modules or videos or anything that were useless, right? So I was able to create from scratch exactly what people wanted. But I do feel like there's some benefits to at least outlining or having a strong vision of what it is that you're going to create. So it doesn't have to be fully produced and edited and created, but at least to maybe have the first module of a course or the full outline and curriculum of what you're going to want to teach so that you can hit the ground running once you sell it, because it can be a little bit stressful. It really, you know, it really depends on your work style too. Some people are really good with deadlines. I know I can produce sometimes if I give myself like, okay, well, this is due next week. You need to put this together. I'll do a good job. But I know other people that could be too much pressure and they might want to have like a module or two done before they actually sell it so that they're a little bit less stressed about the whole thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that my experience has been that when I've asked people what they want, sometimes I feel like they don't always tell you the truth, or you'll say, would you be interested in something on this? And then when you actually create it, they're not interested. So I've learned that it's kind of almost better to put a sales page up and maybe, like you say, have a little bit of it created, but also have the flexibility to change it rather than make something up front. Because I feel like sometimes, I don't know, when I do my research, that people will say they want things, but really the only way you really know is when people actually get their credit card or their debit card out and they actually hand over their hard-earned cash for it.
Absolutely. I've had the same experience. And depending on how you're doing your launches, you could also do a beta program. So that basically means if you have any one-on-one clients or people who might be interested in working with you, but who might be a good fit for maybe a group program or a digital version, you could have them sign up without necessarily having your full sales page done. And so it would just be kind of like a conversation that you have with them and you outline what you would be covering, or it could just be a very short and not as fancy sales page, for example. And then you can get a couple people going through the program. And if they say yes, then obviously, you know, you have something. And if you're getting no's from people and talking to them one-on-one, then you know, okay, this is not quite the right direction, and you can kind of regroup.
And would you advise people to charge for, I want to say beta programs, because I always have this when I'm talking to people from overseas. You say beta, how do you say it?
Beta works too.
Would you advise you to that we should charge for that if we're going to do a kind of trial program?
I do. I think it's the best way to go, because what you were saying earlier, you know, people might say, oh yeah, you know, I'm interested. And sometimes they do that because they want to be polite or they want to be nice or they want to help you out, but they might not actually be committed and they're not going to go through the program and give you feedback and help you make it better. So I recommend charging, and it might not be, there's kind of two ways you could do it. If you do it in a way that's more high touch, so maybe you offer some one-on-one work with them or some more access to you as part of it, you could actually charge more for that kind of founding members or founding class. So that's one option. The other option is to just kind of keep it a little bit lower to kind of test it out and see if people enjoy it and are getting a lot out of it. So there's kind of two ways you can go with that, but definitely charging something is important because you want them to be committed to, you know, actually consuming the content or going through it with you, so that you have, you know, testimonials or case studies or anything really at the end to then help you promote to the official kind of big launch that you might be planning.
I think certainly my experience has been that people don't value what they get for free. So if you said to people, do you want to try this program? It's completely free. Then you may not get their full buy-in. I know what's worked for me is when I first had my, I've got a 12-week coaching program, a group coaching program. And the first time I did it, I basically offered people the chance to do it at the third of the price that I was going to offer it for eventually. And that worked really well because they were still committed because they'd had to hand over their hard-earned cash, but they knew they were getting a good deal at the same time. And I was also able to, if there were any little kinks or things that didn't quite work as well as I wanted them to, they were on this kind of trial program. So I felt there was a bit of sort of give and take on both sides.
I love that. Yeah, I think that it kind of takes that pressure off. And yeah, you can kind of work things out with them a little bit more easily like that. And yeah, I think it's a great approach. Absolutely.
So before you do a launch of a new product or service, do you have to have a big email list?
Good question. I had heard when I was first launching that you need to have at least 1,000 people on your list before you ever launched. And I don't think that's true. You know, actually, I only had 50 people on my list when I launched successfully. And by the end of that first launch, I had 500 people. So doing the actual launch brought more people onto my list. So I think that if you're doing a launch the right way and you have maybe some partners or just other people who are in your industry or who might be willing to share some of the free content that you're putting out for your launch, then that will help you kind of kickstart things and build your list while you're launching. So that being said, I do feel like it's helpful to have at least some people on your list and also to have, you know, some important key pieces in place. So at least understanding, you know, things that we've talked about earlier, but like understanding what people are looking for and who your people are, so you know where they hang out and you can promote and at least tell people about your free content when it does roll out. So one of the things that I was really lucky to have is to, you know, have people who were on Twitter, you know, back in the day, Twitter was a lot more powerful, but today probably Facebook, and they were willing to share my free content. And even though they didn't necessarily end up being customers or they were in completely different industries, but everybody had to eat, right? That was kind of the benefit of the of the food program. They were able to share that, and that really built my list for me. And one of the things that I like to recommend that's a bit of a stealth move, if you will, is to have something called the reverse opt-in. So if you're doing a launch, you know, a lot of times we'll have a landing page or a squeeze page where we send people to give their name and email, and then in return, we'll give them a video series or a PDF or a download or something in exchange. And what happens is, you know, people don't want to send their friends to a landing page or a squeeze page, but they will send their friend to a page to watch a video or download something directly. So what I did in that first successful launch was that I had my download for the ebook that I was giving away. And then on the same page, I had the opt-in right beside it. So people could download it without opting in. But if they liked what they opted in, what they got from the ebook, then they could definitely opt in right away. So I ended up growing my list very quickly because other people were willing to share that page and it didn't feel like, oh, I'm sending my friend to get sold to, right? But if they like it, they can join.
And you've got a 30-day list building challenge. It's the one that I did back when I was first starting to build my list, actually, and it was very good. Can you talk a little bit about some of the strategies you share in that?
Yes. So list building has changed a lot. And I think today a lot more emphasis is placed on things like Facebook ads or more paid list building techniques. But the 30-day challenge is all free ideas that you can implement to build your list. So some of the different ways to kind of focus on that are obviously to have a really strong opt-in gift. So kind of what I was talking about when it comes to like a PDF giveaway or maybe a downloadable MP3 or videos. And it's not so much about the format as it is the content and what it is that you're offering. So if people need to save time, then can you give them a checklist to save them time? Or if they need to, you know, for example, if they're wondering about different resources, can you give them something that will streamline their resource research, for example? So once you have that, then it's all about getting the word out about your free opt-in. And there's a couple of different ways that you can do that without spending money on Facebook ads or other types of ads. So one is to do guest posts or content marketing. So really finding authority websites or blogs that accept contributions from different authors and then writing a great piece of content that really links up to your free gift and gets people to, you know, be curious and click through and sign up for your list. Also doing podcast interviews, doing any other types of kind of cross promotions with other people in your market who might have an audience that you want to get in front of. And the same goes for, you know, pitching yourself in different news outlets or different places that might have your readers, people who are already subscribed to those different publications.
So I know a lot of my listeners, for example, will be Huffington Post bloggers. So creating content on sites like that, that sort of directly, because you can actually put a link in a Huffington Post piece to your website or to an opt-in that you've got.
Exactly. And there's ways to customize those. So for example, if you had an article that goes up and that's really tied to your topic, you could even say on that landing page that you send people to saying like, hey, Huffington Post readers, you know, and then you go into your regular opt-in page where they could opt in for your gift.
And landing pages is something that comes up a lot, actually, in my Facebook community, and people get kind of quite worried about it. Can you just firstly define what we mean by a landing page and why it's important to have them?
Landing pages are essentially a page on your website where there's no navigation and there's no distraction. So no sidebars, no blog links or anything that kind of distracts people. And the whole concept of a landing page is that you would link to it on a specific occasion. So for example, maybe you're doing a Facebook ad, you would send people to a landing page. Maybe you're doing a guest post or an article like we were talking about, and you would send people to a landing page. Or you could even have a link to a landing page in your blog navigation so that if people are curious, they could click on that and then be taken to that page. Now, usually a landing page will have a specific goal. And most of the time, that goal is to get somebody to opt into your email list. But it could also be a sales page. So that's also another type of landing page. But the idea is that it's a very streamlined page and it has, you know, maybe a headline, some bullet points about what they're going to get, whether they purchase or sign up for your email list, depending on what kind of landing page it is. And then also maybe a couple of images, if it's an image of you and your bio, or if it's an image of what they're going to get. Like if they're getting a PDF, you might have an image of that PDF cover, or maybe an MP3 that you could have kind of a little graphic there. And that tends to convert really well, depending on how people get to that page. So if people already know you and they get to that page, they're a lot more likely to join your list. But if you're using it for cold advertising, if you're doing ads to it, then that conversion rate might decrease a little bit more.
And there's lots of tools that you can use to create landing pages, aren't there? I mean, I use Lead Pages and I find it okay. It's a little bit clunky to use, but it kind of does the job for me. But there's lots of other resources out there to help you with this, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. There's always kind of new ones popping up, I feel like. So we also use Lead Pages, and sometimes we create landing pages using Pop-Up Ally Pro. And it's just a page on our site on WordPress with an opt-in box and a headline. And you know, we keep it very, very simple. But if we do want to have something like a countdown or something for a webinar, then we tend to use something like Lead Pages. There's also Insta Pages and I think ClickFunnels. Like there's a whole bunch of different tools out there.
Yeah. And the great thing, I mean, you mentioned about conversions, but with Lead Pages, it sort of gives you that information, doesn't it? And you can choose pages according to what converts the best. So if you're doing a webinar, you can choose a landing page, which you kind of customize to suit what you're doing. But it's got a track record as being high converting for webinars. Or like you said, you could choose one that's got a countdown, a timer on it or something like that. And it's really quite good. I mean, I find it a little bit frustrating to use Lead Pages, but it does do the job and it does give you really good analytics. So you can see, like you say, you can try it with a photo of yourself on it. You can try what happens when you take the photo off, or you can change things about. And so it does give you kind of flexibility like that.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. And like you said, sometimes, you know, it isn't the most smooth interaction, but, you know, like you said, it gets the job done. And what I do like about it too is you could split test. So you could have two different variations and see, like, you know, if this headline works better or that headline works better, or that webinar topic or this webinar topic.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the kind of launch structure. So if you're launching a new product or service, how long would you say you should give yourself to launch, basically, and to do all your kind of pre-launch activities?
I like to say at least 2 months is my way to kind of give people time to get used to it, especially if it's your first time or if it's a new product and there's going to be a lot of work involved. And what that usually means is not like 2 months is the actual launch time, but 2 months is the time to kind of get ready and then also be in that launch mode. So for example, you might spend a month working on your pre-launch content and outlining all the different things in the sales pages and all the items. And then your pre-launch period might be a week or two. And then your actual cart open, which is when people can sign up for your product, might be just a week. So it gives you a little bit of leeway there to play around with the marketing and the campaign that you're going to put together to get people to pay attention and show up for your launch.
And I mean, I guess the thing that I see most people doing all the time is you don't just launch, you don't just suddenly say to people, hey, I've got a new product. You warm people up by doing things like, I mean, I've got a launch coming up in the new year and I'm doing a 10-day PR challenge, first of all, and that'd be my time when I'm kind of getting people used to the idea that there's something new coming up, building my list, getting new people on it. And that's all happening kind of weeks before the actual real launch, if you like.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you want to, sometimes, you know, you can hint that there's something coming. There's different strategies or ideas behind that. So for example, if you want to keep it secret, but you want people to kind of save the date or, you know, kind of want them to be paying attention when the launch does start happening, you can just kind of tell them, hey, there's something cool happening. I'm so excited. Like you can just kind of hint around. But you could also just say like, hey, this is when this is happening. If you want to get started now, like we have some free resources to kind of lead into everything. And people absolutely love just being able to get the ball rolling, even if they might not sign up for the course. It's great to kind of get them involved in your world.
And something I love to do in the sort of month or so before is to kind of start sharing images. So I might share if I've got a new live event or I've got a new course, I might sort of share some of the images and say, oh, I've got something coming up. What do you think about this? Or I might share some copy, or I might start asking some questions and just getting people a little bit curious and interested in what's coming up. Is that the kind of thing you would advise people to do?
Absolutely. And also today with live streams and Instagram, like there's so many different ways for us to connect with people. That's not just via email or not just via, you know, the traditional ways that we tend to market. So I think it's a great way to kind of tease and just get people excited.
And so you've got 3 or 4 weeks where you're kind of warming people up. And what sort of period would you say should actually be your launch period when you're actually launching your new product or service?
So it depends on how much content you're offering for your pre-launch, because basically you want people to have enough time to consume that pre-launch content. And sometimes what can happen is if you have, let's say, 3 videos and a PDF and all kinds of stuff, and you're trying to like cram that into a week or two, and then you have your open cart period very soon after that, people might not have finished with your free content yet. And that can actually kind of cannibalize your sales. So what I recommend is to give enough time for people to consume any of the free stuff that you're putting together as a resource before you open the doors to your program. And then that way also it gives people a chance to, you know, kind of see if what you're offering is going to be a good fit for them. And then obviously when you open the cart, they're a lot more likely to say yes because they're ready for more. So in terms of how long your shopping cart should be open for, usually I like to say, you know, you want a very firm open and close date so that people know this is going away. But also, it really depends on your market. So for example, if you are marketing to moms who might not be online all the time, you don't want them to miss out on the specific dates where things are closing and they might miss that closing time. But I've seen also in the male market, you could have something open for like 24 hours or 48 hours and they're on top of their communication and they're, you know, they're going to sign up. So I think it really depends on your market a little bit. But I think generally I've seen it work very well with 4 days all the way up to 2 weeks.
And you mentioned there sort of giving a bit of scarcity there and kind of, you know, making sure that people know that the cart's going to be closing at a certain time and making people feel like if they don't act quickly, then they're going to miss out.
Exactly. And that really, it comes down to human nature. We all tend to procrastinate and say, oh, you know, this looks great. I'm going to come back after dinner. And then, you know, you come back, but the tab is closed or, you know, something else pops up and you might forget. So that last couple of emails and last couple of reminders for your cart closing just really help people who are interested, but who haven't fully committed yet to say yes. And what I found is that about half of the sales usually come on the last day. And so you don't want to hold back and say, oh, you know, people know it's ending today. They'll have it, you know, they won't forget. You do want to remind them and you want to send them back to the sales page and show them maybe a countdown or something else that kind of gets them off the fence.
And people often worry about sending too many emails during a launch. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think, you know, I'm the same way. We don't want to annoy people. We don't want to make them unsubscribe from our list after we did all this work to get them on our list in the first place. But it's totally normal to get unsubscribes during a launch. And, you know, usually the people who are going to unsubscribe are those who are not going to be customers anyways. So I like to think about that and think about the people who are going to say yes, because they did see those emails. And also I have had people email us and say, oh, I didn't get the email, or, you know, I was on vacation, or, you know, I wish there had been another reminder email, I would have signed up and now it's too late. So I also think about those people who might have missed, you know, one of the earlier emails. So I like to say my rule of thumb is like 1 or 2 emails more than you thought you were going to send. Just that kind of covers it all.
And do you just tend to send more on your last day when your cart's closing, like an extra one, just kind of nudge people along?
Exactly. So I'll have one maybe in the morning of the last day or midday the last day, and then one a couple hours before the cart actually closes.
It's interesting because I interviewed the business coach Nadia Viner back in episode 113, and we were talking about exactly that. And although you feel like you're being a pest, often actually what you're doing is you're leading somebody to make a decision. So somebody who is interested, but for whatever reason, they're sitting on the fence, and that last email can just be what they need to actually make a decision about something they really want to do, but they just need that bit of encouragement.
Absolutely. And it definitely works on me too. Sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, I signed up for this, but then I got busy. And sometimes it happens where you wanted to consume all the free content, but you didn't get through it yet. And you're like, oh, you know, maybe I'll just do the course. But then again, you get busy and then you get that last reminder and you're like, oh, perfect. Like, I'm glad I didn't miss it. I'm going to sign up and actually go through the course now. And I think that's really nice.
So the rule of thumb really is to email slightly more than you feel comfortable with.
Yes, exactly. Like overcome your resistance.
And something that I've seen people like Amy Porterfield do is, so halfway through a launch, you might suddenly kind of pop up and offer an extra bonus. So I know a lot of people in their launches, you know, they have their course or whatever it is they're selling, and they've also got sort of bonus things for people who book early. But I've seen people sort of pop up halfway through and suddenly offer something extra. Is that something that you'd encourage people to think about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important to do that if you're getting a lot of resistance around a particular area. So let's say that you have a course about a certain topic and people are emailing in or maybe leaving comments saying like, oh, I would, but X, Y, and Z. And usually the big objections are that, you know, I don't have time right now, or it's too expensive. Those are kind of the big ones, but it could be something else like, oh, you know, this might not work for me because I have kids, or because I can't move right now, or, you know, can't travel right now, or whatever kind of topics you're talking about, it could be very different. So if you can do a bonus that addresses one of those objections, then, you know, that's going to really get people off the fence. So sometimes bonuses are great if they're like a done for you resource or something that will save somebody time, or maybe even something that will save them money. So like a discount on something or something else that's really related to the core offer that makes the core offer even stronger.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is all really useful. So finally, I wanted to finish up by talking about Ambition Ally and some of your software, because I currently host my membership site on Teachable, which is like an external, trying to describe it. It's like almost like a service, really. Your school is all kind of set up, you subscribe to it, and it's kind of, you know, you can customize it, and a little bit like lead pages, I guess, for the membership sites. But I'm looking to move it onto my own website, because I think it's probably important if I've got a membership site, it's really on my own website. So could you talk a little bit about how Ambition Ally works and how it could help somebody like me?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is a WordPress plugin. Actually, there's two plugins that really help with membership sites. So the first one is called Access Ally, and it's tag-based. So what that means is that if you use a system like ActiveCampaign, ConvertKit, Infusionsoft, or Entreport, and we are adding more integrations, but these are the ones that we're able to support right now. So when you have those kinds of tag-based systems, if somebody has a tag in their email system or their CRM system, then they will have access inside of your membership site. So this is great because you can do different types of courses. You can do like how we do our 30-day challenge, is that every day a new video gets unlocked in the membership site, and all of that is kind of connected to the CRM. Mm-hmm. And then you can also do really cool things with our other plugin called Progress Ally. And that basically sits on top of Access Ally, and it can basically track people's progress. So they can check things off as they complete modules. They can take quizzes to prove that they learned something, or there's other types of quizzes where you can kind of recommend things based on what they answer. So if they need help with a certain thing, you might recommend one course versus another. And you can also kind of auto-generate a PDF of completion, like a certificate at the end of a course. And all of that, again, is related to tags. So if they complete a module or a course, you could then unlock something else as a bonus or give them something else as a thank you. So it's a really cool way to have all of your students be going through kind of their individual journeys, but have all of that information stored in your main CRM at the same time.
And it sounds like with this product that you've created something that solved a problem that you were having in terms of hosting your own courses.
Yeah, exactly. And we learned so much about, you know, really what people need and kind of how courses are best presented from our own courses. And that's how we developed the software for it. And really, our first thing was learning through the 30-day challenge, because what we ended up creating was what I call the login opt-in. So people have to log into our site to access the opt-in that we created, which is our course. And what ended up happening is it created like an organic sales process. So when people were logged into our members area, they could see our paid courses, they could see our plugins and tools, and it ended up doing some cross-selling without us having to do a bunch of, like, you know, hard-hitting sales and marketing. And it just had like this kind of, when you're going through the checkout aisle and you see like a candy bar right before you check out, it's like, oh, maybe I should grab that too. And that's really kind of been an amazing way to grow the business without us having to feel like we're annoying our subscribers, and they get a lot of value from our free course. And so it's a great way to build your list and also use your membership site to also house your paid products.
And so people sign up for your your free course, and then they're in your membership area and they can see that there's other things that, so it's like you say, it's a bit like being in a shop and you're thinking, oh God, I'd really like that as well. That would be quite good. And it just encourages people to go and have a look, does it, or to make inquiries.
Exactly. And we make it really easy. So we have little icons in our site. So if they have access to it, then it's in color. They can click on it and start going through it and track their progress. If it's grayed out, then it means they don't have access to it. But when they click on it, they'll be taken to the sales page where they can unlock it right away.
Okay. Now, I mean, we probably should have touched on this earlier, actually, about, you know, if you're doing a launch, and particularly if you're launching an online course or program or something, then obviously a big question for lots of people is how, you know, where and how do you actually host it? I've tried various things. So I tried Zippy courses to start off with, and it kind of did the job, but I found it a bit ugly to look at, and it kept bothering me that it was ugly. And then I decided to put my membership community on Teachable, which is almost like a third party host, if you like. And it's because I was really kind of, you know, validating the idea, and I just wondered whether people would be interested in what I had to offer. And as it turned out, there were probably more people interested in it than I expected, which is why I'm now trying to move it back onto my own site, which is, you know, a good problem to have. But I guess my worry, and I think it probably reflects lots of people's worries, I don't see myself as a techie person. I'm not from a, you know, developer's background. You know, I'm quite kind of tenacious and I'll go and work out how to use stuff. But, you know, I'm not a techie person at all. So the idea of, you know, putting together a membership site seems quite an intimidating one. And I'm assuming that my feelings on it are quite typical.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it really depends on what you want to create. So what you mentioned about having a really beautiful membership site, that is high on my list as well. So Access Ally works with any WordPress theme. And so you can really use anything that you already have, or if you have a designer that can kind of customize a theme for you to work with your membership site, then it's super flexible in that way. But then if you're not so technical, or at least you don't want to focus so much time on it, we also offer three templates that people can start with, and they're customizable. You can kind of swap out the logos, change the colors, and it's, you know, it's a little bit easier. It's not fully done for you. Like, there's still some customization that you can do, but at the same time, you don't necessarily need to, you know, hire a full team to kind of set things up for you. And then in terms of the actual setup of the courses and behind the scenes stuff that's not necessarily design oriented, we have a couple of different wizards that walk you through. So let's say you want to create a course and you know there's going to be 5 modules. We have this wizard that will actually create all the pages for you and also create all the tags inside of your CRM so that you don't have to do all the work on both sides and it'll just be integrated out of the box. And we also have little wizards if you're importing from a different system. So for example, if you were importing from Teachable or Zippy courses or whatever, you would just import your existing students and they'll get all the right tags and all the right stuff applied to them as well.
Oh, really? So would you still have to get them to sign up again? Would you still need to get them to re-register?
You wouldn't need to get them to re-register, but it would generate a new password for them. And then you could send them an email with the new password.
Ah, okay. And what about the payment side of things? Would you have to get them to re-register again with the new payment details?
Depending on what you used, probably. Mm-hmm. So if you're using Stripe, we're going to be integrating with Stripe in December. So that's going to be available. But depending on what you're using, there might be some, especially if it's a recurring thing, then you might need to have them enter in their credit card details again. But yeah, if it's just a one-time thing, then I don't think you would need to unless they're ready to sign up for the next thing. And then you could definitely get them to do that at that time.
And you offer a monthly payment plan, or you can pay for the year, can't you? Is that right?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. You've shared so much value. I'm going to go and look up a little bit more about Ambition Ally and Access Ally and see what's worked for me, because I use Infusionsoft. So that was one of the things that's quite attractive to me, because it integrates quite well from the looks of things with Infusionsoft. So thanks so much for sharing all of your tips. Where's the best place for us to find you if we want to know more about you?
Yeah. So I've got a podcast called the Off the Charts Podcast. So if you like listening to those episodes, you can just look for it on iTunes, Off the Charts Business Podcast. And then if you go to ambitionally.com, you'll see all kinds of amazing blog posts and all of our different products and things all about membership sites and list building and launching as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Janet, for having me.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come on over and join my Facebook group? It's simply the Soulful PR Facebook community, and I'd love to see you there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.